Katra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are taking on a titan of 20th century thought, Albert Camus's masterful philosophical essay, The Myth of Sisyphus. This isn't just, you know, some dry academic text.
No, not at all. It's really more like a guide to radical, life-affirming freedom, even when the world feels, well, utterly meaningless.
It's the ultimate deep dive into the human condition, really. Our mission today is, well, simple enough. Extract the practical wisdom from Camus's argument.
Right, and help you navigate that foundational human question. How do you find purpose when the universe offers no instruction manual, when it just remains completely silent?
And that silence, that feeling of sort of existential isolation, that's precisely why this book resonates so much right now, I think.
Definitely. We live in an age of just staggering information, endless connection, yet many of the old structures of meaning.
Yeah, the traditional ones, religious, political, societal.
They're collapsing, or at least they feel inadequate for a lot of people.
So Camus starts with the highest possible stakes. He immediately asks, is life, you know, in the face of this meaningless, indifferent cosmos, actually worth the effort?
Is physical suicide the only logical response? He frames it as the single most important philosophical problem. It's quite intense from page one.
He definitely doesn't shy away from the darkness.
Hmm.
But his ultimate answer is surprisingly uplifting, isn't it?
It really is. But before we get to his solutions, maybe we should unpack the man himself a bit.
Good idea. Okay, so Albert Camus, born 1913, died tragically young in 1960, French-Algerian novelist, journalist, philosopher, won the Nobel Prize really young, only 44.
Yeah, and what's fascinating here, I think, is that his philosophy isn't just abstract theory cooked up in an office somewhere.
Right.
Camus was born poor, working-class family, French Algeria. He was intensely connected to the physical world, you know, the sun, the sea, the actual feel of being alive in the present.
That grounded sensory connection seems absolutely vital to understanding it. It really informs his passion for life, doesn't it?
Totally. He wasn't just pondering abstractions. His life included real struggle. I mean, especially his involvement in the French Resistance during World War II.
Ah, yeah.
That experience directly fed into his writing on justice, struggle, the moral need to fight oppression, even when the odds seem impossible.
So his philosophy, this absurdism, it was really forged in the heat of lived reality, political commitment. Not just intellectual games.
Exactly, which is maybe why he specifically rejected being called an existentialist.
He did, yeah. He's often lumped in with Sartre,
mm-hmm.
But Camus preferred the label absurdism.
And the distinction matters. While existentialists might focus more on creating meaning through radical choice, Camus zeroed in on the irreconcilable conflict itself.
The clash.
Yes, the clash. His authority kind of comes from relentlessly pursuing intellectual honesty, even when it's deeply uncomfortable.
Okay, so let's dive into the core text then, The Myth of Sisyphus. Essentially, it's a guidebook for thriving after you realize the universe doesn't particularly care about you.
Precisely. And the whole core thesis rests on defining the absurd. But the absurd isn't despair, and it's definitely not chaos, which is a common misunderstanding.
So what is it then?
It is the inescapable divorce, as he calls it, the confrontation between two fundamental realities that just can never be unified.
Okay, and those two realities are?
Well, first, there's humanity's innate, passionate, almost desperate desire for meaning, clarity, purpose. We seem hardwired to ask why.
We need answers.
We crave them. And the second reality, the universe's unreasonable silence, its cold, indifferent, irrational refusal to provide any answer whatsoever.
It's like shouting a really profound question into a void.
And the only reply is the echo of your own voice.
Yeah. Wow, That sounds terrifying, honestly.
It can be. Yeah. But connecting this to the bigger picture, the book argues that true liberation isn't found by running away from that conflict.
No.
No, it's found by embracing the tension consciously, facing it head on.
So if you accept the absurd as the starting point, this unavoidable clash, you immediately discard physical suicide as an option.
Right. But then, Kima says, you face another danger. Philosophical suicide.
Let's clarify this because it's crucial. Physical suicide is ending your life. Philosophical suicide is what? Intellectual evasion.
Exactly. It's abandoning reason in favor of some comforting illusion. Camus critiques thinkers like, say, Kierkegaard, who, after identifying this existential contradiction, basically took a leap of faith into religious certainty. They tried to resolve the absurd by pretending one side of the equation, the universe's silence, doesn't exist, embracing God or some other abstract unity.
Right, and here's where it gets really interesting, I think, because you see modern versions of this everywhere, even non-religious ones.
Oh, absolutely.
People taking leaps of faith into maybe extreme political ideologies or uncritical devotion to some guru, or buying into a self-help system that promises to wipe away all ambiguity.
Any attempt to pretend the contradiction isn't there, substituting the hard work of conscious living with the comfort of a fixed external doctrine. Camus insists that intellectual integrity demands you live with the contradiction. Never just accept a final, easy answer.
Okay, so if we refuse both physical and philosophical evasion, we arrive at Camus's path forward. The three consequences of living an absurd life.
And these are revolutionary choices, he argues, not just abstract ideas.
So the first consequence is revolt.
Yes. And this isn't necessarily like physical protest on the streets, although it could be. It's more of a continuous conscious rebellion against our mortality, against the world's futility, but lived without resignation.
It's saying no to fate while still saying yes to life.
Precisely. It's deciding to affirm the value of life despite knowing its ultimate pointlessness.
I find that incredibly powerful. That internal, I know this is pointless, but I refuse to surrender my consciousness. And the second consequence.
Freedom. This is a huge one, a kind of terrifying but also profound inner freedom.
How so?
It's achieved by abandoning all hope for an ultimate purpose or a heavenly reward or some grand future historical destiny. You let go of hope for external validation.
So freedom from the burden of needing ultimate meaning.
Exactly. And that frees you up to experience the immediate, tangible, present moment fully. Because if there's no ultimate scoreboard, then this moment right now is all that truly matters.
Which leads very naturally to the third consequence, passion.
Right. Since no experience is inherently more meaningful than another in the grand cosmic scheme, they all end the same way, right? The goal shifts.
Shifts from quality to
quantity, in a sense. The focus becomes accumulating the greatest quantity of intense lived experiences, living as much as possible.
He calls it the quantitative ethic. And he uses these archetypes to illustrate it, doesn't he? Not as moral role models, but as studies in living without illusion.
That's key. They're not heroes in the traditional sense. For instance, the seducer, Don Juan, he embraces this quantitative ethic. He moves from one passionate relationship to the next, not out of cynicism, Camus argues, but because he rejects the illusion of finding the one single eternal love that would give his life transcendent meaning.
So he maximizes his present experiences instead.
Yeah. Or think about the conqueror, someone who commits fully to, say, political struggle or revolution, knowing full well their victories are temporary, that history will eventually erase them.
Their value isn't in the final outcome.
No, it's found in the conscious action itself, the rebellion, the shaping of the human world right now. The struggle is the meaning.
And this brings us perfectly to the ultimate symbol of the absurd man, Sisyphus. Can you just quickly recap the myth for us?
Sure. Sisyphus tricked the guides or defied them in some way. And as punishment, he was condemned for eternity to roll a massive boulder up a steep hill. Only for it to inevitably tumble back down every single time he neared the summit. Forever.
It's the ultimate image of strenuous, repetitive, and, well, completely futile labor.
The human condition distilled into one image, basically.
Yeah. But Camus turns this around and declares Sisyphus the absurd hero. Why isn't he just a symbol of misery and pointless suffering?
Because the power isn't in pushing the rock up. It's in the moment after it falls, the conscious pause.
When he walks back down the mountain.
Exactly. When Sisyphus walks back down, he is fully conscious of his fate. He's lucid. He knows the rock will fall again. He knows his life is nothing but this endless, meaningless cycle.
And yet,
he chooses to scorn his fate. In that lucid awareness, Camus says, he is superior to his rock. He's superior to the gods who condemned him. He has zero illusions left.
That scorn, that conscious ownership of his destiny, that's the core of his dignity.
It is. And that leads to that famous, incredibly powerful conclusion.
The struggle itself toward the heights is enough to fill a man's heart. One must imagine Sisyphus happy.
It's defiant contentment. A happiness born not from illusion, but from recognizing and sort of overcoming the metaphysical trap through sheer consciousness.
So, Okay, let's bring this back down to earth a bit. What does this all mean for you, the listener, in your modern life? The first key theme we pulled out is lucidity as the highest value.
Right. Consciousness. Seeing the world exactly as it is without comforting illusions, that's the bedrock for freedom and dignity.
How does that apply day to day?
Well, think about struggling through a really hard, maybe tedious task. The knowledge that you are choosing to engage in that struggle and doing it with awareness and dignity, that becomes the only value that really matters, not some external reward.
That immediately connects to how we handle burnout, doesn't it? So many jobs feel Sisyphean, you know, endless emails, projects that just restart next quarter.
Totally Sisyphean.
So the application here is maybe reframing that monotony. You choose to embrace the task as your rock. The meaning isn't in the outcome, which might be fleeting or repetitive anyway.
But in the conscious effort, the skill, the dignity you bring to it today, that focus combats the feeling of meaninglessness that often drives burnout.
That feels incredibly liberating.
Mm.
It also provides, as you mentioned, liberation from the pressure of finding your purpose.
Oh, huge. Modern culture is just obsessed with finding that one single, external, all-defining purpose for your life.
Yeah, what's your passion? What's your why?
Right. Camus basically removes that pressure entirely. He suggests there is no single purpose out there waiting to be found.
Which means
we are free, radically free, to create meaning through a whole multitude of passions, diverse experiences. Mm-hmm. You can find value in your career, sure, but also your hobbies, your relationships, your activism.
All without needing them to connect to some grand external destiny. It's a much more flexible approach.
It really is. And it's a call to what Camus terms living without appeal, making decisions based on your own conscious experience, your immediate values.
Not constantly looking over your shoulder for validation from some higher authority, whether it's God, tradition, society, whatever.
It's intellectual honesty in action, taking responsibility for your own value system.
Okay, so looking at the key takeaways then. For me, the most potent idea is that shift from hope to passion.
Explain that a bit more.
Well, hope for Camus often seems like just another form of evasion, right? Hope for a better world later. Hope for an afterlife. Hope that meaning will somehow just be delivered to you if you wait long enough.
Mm-hmm. It can be passive.
Exactly. Instead, he demands we embrace passion. Not necessarily reckless passion, but the intense, conscious experience of the present moment.
That shift from waiting for meaning to actively creating experiences now, that's incredibly powerful. I agree.
I want to share the lines that, for me, really capture this idea of rebellious joy. Camus says, there is no fate that cannot be surmounted by scorn.
Scorn, it's such a strong word.
It is. It's not just passively accepting fate. It's actively treating it with disdain, with defiance, while you get on with living.
And of course, that central line that just perfectly summarizes the dignity of effort. The struggle itself toward the heights is enough to fill a man's heart. The book's lasting insight, I think, is that true human dignity isn't found in escaping our fate, trying to trick the gods or find loopholes.
But in facing it square on with clear-eyed courage and, yeah, that scornful joy.
Mm-hmm.
So the ultimate provocative thought we want to leave you with today. Maybe the absence of inherent meaning isn't the sign of failure. Maybe it's the very condition necessary for your complete freedom.
So the question becomes, what small, repetitive rock in your own life, that tedious task, that ongoing struggle, can you choose to embrace today? Not with dread, but with full consciousness, and maybe even a little bit of that Camusian defiance.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.